Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Today I will be discussing the Sabbasava Sutta. This is called, in English translation, All the Taints, or Discourse on All the Asavas. And this is Sutta number 2 in the Majjhima Nikaya. So it's probably been assigned to the second position in the sequence of the Majjhima Nikaya because the compilers of the Pali canon thought that this was a particularly important discourse. Okay, the sutta opens when the Buddha is living in Jeta's Grove in Savatthi, and then he announces to the monks, I will teach you a discourse on the restraint of all the asavas, the taints. Listen and attend closely to what I shall say. So this statement announces the theme of the discourse, which is the restraint of all the asavas. The key word here is the Pali word sangvara, which means restraint, restraining, holding back, keeping under control. And now in the next sentence, the Buddha makes a statement with a somewhat different significance. Here we're in paragraphs 3, and he says, monks, I say that the destruction of the taints or the asavas is for one who knows and sees, not for one who does not know and does not see. Now this seems to be a different idea, and it's a bit puzzling that the Buddha introduces the theme of the discourse as the restraint of the asavas, that is, keeping them in check, keeping them under control. But in the very next paragraph, where he actually begins the elaboration of the discourse, he speaks not about restraining the taints, but about their destruction. The Pali word here, kaya, usually suggests the complete elimination of something. So we have these two ideas juxtaposed. First, the idea of restraining the taints, then, immediately after, the idea of the destruction of the taints. Before we go further, I want to explain a little bit this word asava. This word is very difficult to translate in any kind of satisfactory way into English. The word comes from the verb savati, which means to flow. The Chinese translated this word, the Sanskrit word, asrava, into Chinese using the character which is pronounced lo. This character is quite interesting because it almost, if you look at the character, it gives a key to the original meaning of the word asava. Sometimes the Chinese characters function almost like commentaries on the word in the original language. In this case, the word Sanskrit asrava or Pali asava. The Chinese character has the radical for water, and the main part of the character shows a image of a building which is leaking. And so the asava has the sense of something which is leaking, seeping, water seeping into a house, into a building. In this case, it's the building, the dwelling of one's own mind. The Pali word is constructed from a stem or base, sava, which means a flow, and it has the prefix a, the long a. And now this prefix a can give the word the sense of either something that flows in or something that flows out. And just by looking at the word, we don't have any way to determine exactly which way the flow is taking place. And thus, some English translators render the word asava as influxes, or even use the English word influence in the literal sense of what flows in. Okay, when you're influenced by, for example, by public opinion or by somebody else's opinion, we say that that opinion flows into your mind and thereby it influences your thinking. In this case, asava has the sense of influences, of things that flow into the mind. And we could also take asava as indicating a flow in the opposite direction, a flow out of the mind. And thus, other English translators sometimes use the rendering effluence. Effluent is flow, it's the fluence, plus X, which becomes F, flowing out. The asavas in the sutta literature refer to three defilements. And in my opinion, these three defilements have been singled out as asavas because they are the most basic defilements at the base of samsara, at the very foundation of the round of repeated existence. We've met these three defilements again and again in the Nikaya texts. So we've met them again and again. And what are they? We have the kamasava, the bhavasava, and the avijasava. Okay, the kamasava is the deep underlying tendency of sensual desire, craving for sensual pleasures. It is the primordial tendency at the base of the mind, at the base of samsara, this subtle flow into the mind of sensual desire when the mind is stimulated by the input of sensory impressions, pleasant, enjoyable sensory impressions. When we are subject to the impact of pleasant sensory phenomena, then the kamasava, the taint of sensuality, is provoked. And so sensuality flows into the mind, into consciousness, giving rise to sensual thoughts, sensual craving, the seeking after sensual pleasures. So the sensual desire flows from the deep underlying base of the mind into conscious awareness, and then from the consciousness, the sensual desire flows out through the five senses towards the corresponding object. The sensual desire will flow out through the eye faculty towards visible forms, through the ear faculty towards delightful sounds, through the nose faculty, tongue faculty, body faculty, towards their respective objects. The next asava is the bhavasava, translated here as the taint of existence. And this is the deep fundamental craving for continued existence. It's the urge to go on existing in one form of existence or another. So this is the force that keeps us floating through the round of rebirths, passing from one mode of existence to another. And this is why the Buddha says that it is craving that keeps the process of repeated existence turning. The third taint, the third basic defilement here, is ignorance, which means not knowing, not understanding. It's avijjāsava, the taint, the mental corruption, the inflow or outflow of not understanding the real nature of things. In a way, the influx of ignorance is something that's always present in the mind, but sometimes it gets especially intensified, and then it flows over the mind and overwhelms the mind. As I understand it, these three defilements, or the set of three defilements, is more fundamental than the three unwholesome roots: greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed, hatred, and delusion are generally used in a somewhat different context. That set generally signifies the three roots of unwholesome action, of unwholesome karma. So when greed, hatred, and delusion are used, then the terms have a more ethical nuance to them. But we can say that the unwholesome root of greed closely corresponds to the taint of sensual desire and the taint of craving for existence, that is, to kamasava and bhavasava, whereas moha or delusion is more or less synonymous with ignorance. Hatred, dosa, is not an asava, and no text that I know explains why this is the case, but in my understanding, the reason is that hatred is not a factor that involves a grasping or clinging to continued existence. It's not a factor that drives us forward through the round of becoming, through samsara. Hatred is a negative force that comes into the mind and takes the form of aversion towards people we don't like or situations that are unpleasant. Hatred is a kind of recoil away from what is repulsive, what is disagreeable. Whereas the asavas are mental forces that keep us stuck, bound to what is enjoyable, what is agreeable. So the asavas involve, you can call this, some degree of clinging, of adherence, of sticking to their object. Though as a set they are different from the upadanas. The upadanas, those are the things that are usually translated as clinging. But we could say that the asavas are somewhat akin to the upadanas, though they're more primordial, but still they involve some grasping of the object, some attraction towards the object, whereas hatred is a negative response, a pushing away, a turning away from the object. Okay, the way I've just explained the word asava, that conforms to its normal usage. But in this particular sutta, we find the word asava being used in a looser sense, a more general sense, applying to indicating anything that makes trouble, that causes difficulty, things that bring conflict into the mind, that keep the mind in turmoil, things that make us upset or displeased, or things that cause a mental burning or fever. The main purpose or point of practicing the Buddha's teaching, according to the early presentation of the suttas, of the discourses, is to reach the destruction of the asavas. This is called asava kaya, long A, S-A-V-A, K-K-H-A-Y-A. When the Buddha, on the night of his enlightenment, reached the climax of his enlightenment, he says that his mind was liberated from the three asavas, from the taint of sensuality, the taint of craving for existence, and from the taint of ignorance. Also, when he describes the progressive development of his disciples through the different stages, he mentions the attainment of the four jhanas, or meditative absorptions, then the higher knowledges, the abhinyas or avijas, and then the climax comes when the mind is liberated from the three taints of sensuality, craving for existence, and ignorance. Thus, the final goal of the Dhamma is the destruction of the taints, and one has to proceed along the course of practice by restraining the taints. And this is accomplished through the practical step-by-step training laid down by the Buddha. If one doesn't work at restraining the taints in the step-by-step process, then it won't be possible to reach the destruction of the taints. This is simply not going to happen if you are going to amusement parks, going out to nightclubs, riding on roller coasters, enjoying oneself. Then it's not going to happen that suddenly, out of the blue, the taints will be destroyed. Rather, in order to achieve the destruction of the taints, one has to work by restraining them, and then by building up a corresponding positive force through developing the factors of the Noble Path, the enlightenment factors, the spiritual faculties, and so on. Among all of the factors that one has to develop, the most crucial for achieving the destruction of the taints is wisdom, or panya. And in this sutta, panya is spoken of under the terms knowing and seeing. So that is why the Buddha says that the destruction of the taints is for one who knows and sees. Usually, when the Buddha explains, he says that one knows and sees the Four Noble Truths. But here he uses these terms, knowing and seeing, in a somewhat different formulation. He says that the destruction of the taints is for one who knows and sees, not for one who does not know and does not see. And then he raises the question, for one who knows and sees what? And the answer he gives is wise attention and unwise attention. Here the Pali terms are very revealing. Wise attention is yoniso manasikara. The word yoniso, we sometimes render it wise, sometimes careful, thorough, thoroughgoing, precise, methodical. And manasikara can be rendered attention or even consideration or reflection. Manasikara is not just simply turning the mind to something, but it is considering that object thoroughly and carefully. Okay, so yoniso manasikara means a deep careful, thoroughgoing consideration and investigation. And ayoniso manasikara, the opposite, is the lack of this. That is, it's superficial, careless, or sloppy attention. And these two terms play extremely important roles in many aspects of the Buddha's teaching. And the Buddha highlights the significance by saying that when one attends unwisely, unarisen taints arise and arisen taints increase. While when one attends wisely, unarisen taints do not arise and arisen taints are abandoned. So this gives a key role to both wise attention and unwise attention. The commentary to this sutta states that unwise attention here serves as the base of the entire round of existence, whereas wise attention is a key to liberation. How is this so? We can work it out by putting together a number of other suttas. From some suttas in the Samyutta Nikaya on the enlightenment factors, we know that the main obstacles to the development of the mind, the development of samadhi and punya, concentration and wisdom, are the five mental hindrances, the pancha nivarana. Now, when one attends unwisely or carelessly, then the five hindrances, sensual desire, ill will, dullness and drowsiness, restlessness and remorse, and doubt, have the opportunity to arise and to grow. And the sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya in the Book of Tens says that the five hindrances are the nourishment, the nutrition, the strong condition for the growth and the arising of other unwholesome factors. And another sutta, Majjhima number 9, says that ignorance is the condition for the arising of all the asavas. And so we have a sequence here. We can say that ignorance is the condition for the arising of ignorance is the condition for the arising of unwise attention. Unwise attention is the condition for the arising of the three asavas. That's the asava of sensuality, craving for existence, and ignorance. And then these asavas, we can say, are the cause for the arising and reinforcement of the five hindrances. And so we can see that there's not a simple linear process of conditioning here, but we have ignorance as a condition for unwise attention, and unwise attention is a condition for the three asavas, which include the asava of ignorance. So here we have not simply A causes B causes C causes D, but a certain interaction and reciprocal conditionality going on, where A causes B and B causes A. One condition feeds back into a preceding condition to reinforce that condition, and it also flows forward into the consequences. The suttas on the enlightenment factors in the Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, suttas 24 and 35, say that wise attention or careful consideration, that is yoniso manasikara, is a condition or a cause for the development of the seven enlightenment factors. And when the seven enlightenment factors arise and grow, they give rise to knowledge and vision, in other words, to wisdom. And when knowledge and vision arise, they eliminate ignorance. And when ignorance is eliminated, then the taints are destroyed. In this way, we can see how this careful consideration or wise attention is fundamental to the entire sequence, the whole process that culminates in liberation. Nowadays, it's fashionable for many meditators say that the whole point of Buddhist Dhamma is just to be aware of the present, just know what's happening in the present, and everything will take care of itself. But if you read the suttas, you'll see that the Buddha himself again and again says that one has to practice yoniso manasikara. One has to develop yoniso manasikara. In Majjhima Nikaya Sutta number 43, he mentions two conditions for the arising of right view, samadhiti. What are these two conditions? One is the voice of another, that is, one hears the teaching from another person. And what is the second condition? The second condition is wise consideration, careful attention. When the Buddha speaks about his own enlightenment, this is in Samyutta Nikaya chapter 12, it's in especially suttas number, I think it's from sutta number 6 to 10, he speaks about how he was sitting reflecting on old age and death. And he was wondering, how can one break through this bondage of old age and death? And then he said that as I reflected with yoniso manasikara, with wise consideration, then there took place in me a breakthrough in wisdom, namely, with birth as condition, there is old age and death. And in this way, he traces the chain of causation all the way back to the very beginning, with ignorance as condition, the volitional formations, the sankharas arise. And so this discovery of dependent origination comes about through panya, through wisdom. But this wisdom arises on the basis of yoniso manasikara, careful consideration. The commentaries generally explain yoniso manasikara simply as attending to impermanence, suffering, non-self, and the unattractive nature of the body. In my view, the commentators are using a neat formula to explain something which is actually a rather complex phenomena. If we base ourselves on the suttas themselves, we see that the Buddha seems to be using yoniso manasikara in a sense which has many applications and which applies to different situations. It's not only the type of attention that leads to insight, understanding. For example, the Buddha says that when we consider the five hindrances, we have to consider in each case what is the condition out of which this hindrance arises. Why does sensual desire arise? Why does ill will arise? Why does dullness and drowsiness arise? Why do restlessness and worry arise? Why does doubt arise? When considering the factors responsible for the arising of the five hindrances, what we are doing is applying yoniso manasikara, wise consideration. Okay, now we come to paragraph 4. This introduces two ideas. Well, here in paragraph 4 we find 7 types of taints. Taints that are to be abandoned by seeing, taints to be abandoned by restraining, taints to be abandoned by using, taints to be abandoned by enduring, taints to be abandoned by avoiding, taints to be abandoned by removing, and taints to be abandoned by developing. In this paragraph now, the Buddha is speaking about the abandoning of the asavas. And here, still another word is used. The noun form is pahana, PAHANA. And so the Buddha enumerates 7 types of taints, or actually 7 ways in which the taints are to be abandoned. And the way I would see it, the word abandoning has a somewhat wider range of meaning, which covers both restraint and destruction. So we could say that both restraining the asavas and destroying the asavas are different ways of abandoning the asavas. And of the 7 methods for abandoning the asavas which are listed here, 2 of them bring about the destruction of the asavas. These 2 are the most important. One of them is what is called seeing. The Pali word dasana has a more precise technical meaning than the English word seeing. It really means seeing with wisdom, especially seeing the 4 noble truths with wisdom, the wisdom of the noble path. And the word bhavana, which is the 7th method of abandoning the taints, is another method that will bring about the destruction of the taints. Then 5 methods come in between, and these are methods for restraining the taints, for weakening them so that they can finally be destroyed by both seeing and by developing. The practice of restraint lays the groundwork or establishes the conditions, whereas the destruction of the taints abandons them completely so that they can never arise again. The word seeing is a technical expression, or it's often used as a technical expression, for the first stage of enlightenment, the first stage of awakening, which is the stage of stream entry, or sotapatti. Since at this stage, the disciple gains the first realization, the first vision, the first seeing into the ultimate truth of the Dhamma. Before this, he's practicing vipassana, or insight, gaining deeper and deeper insights into the nature of conditioned phenomena. But when that insight comes to its maturity, then there takes place a breakthrough to the Dhammacakku, the eye of Dhamma, the vision of the Dhamma, by which one sees the ultimate truth, the unconditioned truth, the unconditioned element, Nibbana. And at the same time, one also sees for the first time all 4 noble truths. Now, simply seeing the 4 noble truths, even the truth of cessation, the truth of Nibbana, doesn't immediately bring liberation of the mind. Based on this seeing, based on this understanding, one now has to practice the development of the other factors of the path. Through the experience of seeing, one gains an accurate, precise, invincible understanding of the truth of the Dhamma. Once one reaches that point, one will never again lose that understanding, lose that wisdom, that faculty of wisdom. One can never fall back to the level of an ordinary deluded person. This understanding now becomes grafted into one's being. One has seen the truth, and once one has seen it, one can never lose it, even when one passes from this life to a future life. Then, once one acquires that vision, one takes up the practice of the path to develop other factors which make the mind purer, more unified, more focused, and which make the vision sharper and clearer, so that one can break through to the higher stages and eliminate the subtler defilements. And so that is the work of development, especially in this sutta, cultivating the 7 enlightenment factors. And when they reach full maturity, then the mind will be fully liberated from the taints. Okay, I will stop here, and then I will continue the analysis of the sutta next week. Thank you for your attention, and may the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you all. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Sasanang. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Desanang. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Mang Parang. Etavata Cham Hehi Sampadang Punya Sampadang. Sabbe deva anumodantu, sabba sampatti siddhya. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu, sabba sampatti siddhya. Sabbe sat anumodantu, sabba sampatti siddhya.